Are you ready, Carla? Good morning and welcome to the August 14th meeting of the Portland City Council. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Before we begin the formal calendar this morning, we have some youth ambassadors that we're going to recognize. We're pleased to introduce our Portland Bologna student ambassadors. Bologna is one of our 10 sister cities around the world. This organization, we depend on our sister city associations to make this connection real, and this student ambassador program is a piece of that. The Portland Bologna Sister City Association has two exchanges, one a student and faculty exchange between PSU and the University of Bologna, and another one, this one is that we're celebrating, is for teenagers. It's a reciprocal alternating program where a small group of Portland teens visits Bologna every other summer, and an Italian group comes here in the alternating summer. And we've been doing this, I guess, since 2009. This summer, Portland sent 14 students to Bologna. While they were there, they met with my counterpoint, Mayor Mirola, and got to explore the ways that Portland and Bologna are alike. We love bicycles. We love pizza. We love the outdoors. There's more than that to the relationship, but that's a good start. We have three, I believe, of our students here today, and I just want to thank them and their colleagues for being great ambassadors for the city. This relationship is a wonderful one. I haven't had a chance to visit this sister city myself, but I'm looking forward to that opportunity someday. We want to give your leader, Sally Hudson, the rest of the certificates, but first I want to invite up the ones who I think are here. Samuel Schrader, is Sam here? Come on up. And Hannah Courtney, Max DePonia, and Amanda McKay. And have a seat for a few minutes, if you would, and tell us about this experience if you'd like to. We want to hear about how this looks from your vantage point. Pull up another chair if you want. So welcome. Hannah, do you want to get started?
Okay. It was really fun. I liked getting to know, like, the culture. It was really cool to, like, be living with someone and, like, knowing their everyday life.
Did you speak any Italian before you went?
No.
Yeah. It was a total immersion then.
Yeah.
other comments?
It was a way to learn outside of a classroom that can't be done in school. Like, learning other people's cultures and other groups of people just can't be achieved in the classroom.
Yeah, yeah. How about you?
It was a great opportunity to see another country in a different way other than, like, a school exchange. It was really fun.
Sam Schrader, my son, wrote the following. My time in Italy was remarkable. From the towers and domes of Florence to the canals of Venice, I had the best 2 weeks of my life. The Portland Bologna Sister City Association gave me an opportunity not many people get. Staying with an Italian family was like having a behind-the-scenes view of Italian life. The food seemed more authentic, the people seemed more genuine, the experiences seemed more special. I feel like I've matured more as a person for having done this. And he concludes by saying, and come on, I've got some pretty impressive bragging rights. Thank you.
Well said. Now, had any of you spent any time in another country, living there other than this? Was this your first time actually just living in another country as opposed to being a tourist or a visitor? Pretty different, yeah. My son got the chance to go to San Jose, Costa Rica on an exchange like this, and he was learning Spanish, and it really accelerated it for him, and now he's the stage manager at Milagro Theater, so you never know where these things will lead. Well, thanks for coming in this morning, and we'll give you your certificates and wish you bon voyage. What's bon voyage in Italian? Well,
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
May I have a moment to ask our visitors a favor? For years, I've been trying to get the Multnomah County Library to adopt the classic young adult book From the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basilie Frankweiler as the Everybody Reads book for a year, and Bologna, Italy plays a critical role in that book.
Ah.
So I ask you as ambassadors to Bologna if you'll join me in my campaign to get the library to adopt that book one year.
That's a good
We
one.
Can discuss further later.
Well, thank you all. Arrivederci. Thank you. All right. We'll move on to the formal calendar and wish our students well in the rest of the remaining days of summer. We have five communications items. Can we take the first of those, please, Carla?
Item 773, request of Craig Beebe to address council regarding City Club of Portland bicycle transportation report.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor Hales and commissioners. My name is Craig Beebe. I'm pleased to be here with two colleagues this morning to speak with you briefly about the bicycle transportation advocacy efforts of the City Club of Portland. You may be wondering, why would the City Club of Portland be here to discuss bicycling advocacy? As you know, City Club is not a typical bike group. We're not even an advocacy group. So we're an organization dedicated to careful research, informed debate, and good governance. And we are here because City Club believes that a safe, integrated bicycle network is essential to the health and future of our city. As you likely know, the club's membership voted overwhelmingly in June to adopt an extensive research report making clear findings and recommendations about the crucial role of bicycling in the city's transportation system. This report was built on many months of interviews, literature reviews, and original analysis by a team of volunteers. In other words, City Club has given a resounding endorsement of a city in which every resident, wherever they live or wherever they or whoever they are, should be able to get on a bike and ride safely to wherever they are going. City Club recognizes that this is good for all Portlanders, no matter how they get around most of the time, because it makes our roadways safer, saves money, supports our economy, and improves health. But City Club does not expect its adopted report to sit on the shelf. The club has created an advocacy committee to pursue the spirit and specifics of its adopted findings and recommendations. I am pleased to chair that committee and to serve on it with these two and another. There's 10 of us overall on the committee. Over the next year or so, our committee will bring City Club's unique voice and leverage to the transportation conversation in Portland. We'll forge partnerships and build awareness among advocates, business, and community groups. We'll reach out to elected officials such as yourselves and government staff to encourage smart planning and effective outreach. We are here to serve and occasionally to sway. I can assure you this is not the last time you'll be hearing from us. If we are to succeed in becoming a world-class city, we must firmly reject a mindset that defines residents by their mode of transportation, where cyclists are cyclists, drivers are drivers, and pedestrians are pedestrians. This is a mindset that serves no one. It's time to move from planning for single modes and conflict to planning for true mobility and choice. Transportation should build connections, not walls. This is what Portlanders desire and deserve. And this is what we hope to achieve through the City Club of Portland's Bicycle Transportation Advocacy Committee. We look forward to working with you in those efforts. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Hales and commissioners. My name is Henry Leinweber. I'm also a City Club member and a member of the Bicycle Transportation Advocacy Committee. As Craig said, and as I'm sure you are aware this morning on your morning commute, bicycling is a pillar of the transportation system in Portland. It not only helps define the character of our city, but provides residents with a cost-effective, healthy, and efficient way of getting around. We've made outstanding progress in promoting bicycling, but there's still a lot of work to be done. The City Club has identified safety as its primary concern. This includes both the creation of safe infrastructure for bicyclists as well as safe behavior among all road users. We found that safer bicycling environment will dramatically increase the diversity of bicyclists. Women, senior citizens, and communities of color all commonly identify real or perceived lack of safety as reasons why they choose not to ride a bicycle. There is also a need to improve the diversity of citizens consulted when planning new projects, and this issue of diversity is something that we on the committee have all struggled with as well, and how do we be more inclusive. The City Club also identified the need to include more comprehensive data collection. Reliable data on bicycle traffic patterns and needs will go a long way towards efficiently and effectively and fairly allocating resources throughout the city. And finally, the City Club believes that there are opportunities for better integration of bicycles and TriMet. with the goal of increasing ridership of both. Portland has emerged as a leader not just in sustainable transportation, but in sustainable living as well. Bicycling has an important role in moving Portland forward, and the City Club looks forward to working with all of you on this exciting opportunity. Thank you.
Henry, I have to ask you, are you related to Tony?
I am. It's my dad's cousin.
Yeah. Great family.
Thank you.
There are a couple of long-standing Portland names in this panel here.
I have no relation to the other BB family on my part.
I wonder. Disavows all knowledge.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Hales and Commissioners Saltzman, Fish, Fritz, and Novick. Thanks again for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Alex Tinker. I'm also a member of the City Club's Bike Transportation Advocacy Committee. By adopting the report and recommendations that Craig and Henry discussed, City Club members committed to engaging actively in Portland's transportation discussion. Moreover, City Club members overwhelmingly agreed that bicycling is central to our transportation challenges and to our transportation opportunities. But we're not here simply to advocate for cycling for cyclists or for bicycle transportation. We don't have a client whose revenues would be boosted as a result of pro-bike policies. We're here to advocate for the City of Portland and for all of its citizens, present and future. Portlanders are fortunate to live in a forward-looking city. City Club exists in part to keep citizens involved in our collective look forward. Based on the research process Craig described, our report recommends both big-picture strategies and tangible, discrete steps Portland can take to better integrate and promote multimodal transportation. Our goal is to help some of those recommendations come to fruition. Portland's off to an impressive start. You might say that as a city, we're in the saddle and cranking in high gear, but we do have a long ways yet to go. While this era of scarce public resources increasingly seems like the new normal, our city remains rich with good citizens and thoughtful leaders. Over the next year or so, the Bike Advocacy Committee hopes to serve as a resource for decision makers and planners, as a repository for the information and knowledge we continue to gather and process, and occasionally as a prod for action. We look forward to engaging in the transportation system plan and the comprehensive plan processes and to supporting your efforts to continue to make Portland a truly great city. I encourage you to read the report, which is available on the City Club website. And I'm certain that even you, esteemed council members, will learn at least a thing or two about bike transportation when you do. We'll also leave you each with a pamphlet outlining the Advocacy Committee's priority recommendations and a copy of Craig and Rob Sadowski of BTA's op-ed describing a new proposed paradigm for transportation planning. Thanks again for your time this morning.
I have a question. Well, it's a question and a comment. I believe that the city is doing its part in promoting bicycling and safe infrastructure for bicycling. Just today, we have a $1.3 million grant for the Williams Intersection Project and almost $500,000 for Safe Routes to School in East Portland and multiple other examples of continuing to do our part. The piece that I'm particularly interested in is your advice and assistance in promoting safe behavior by bicyclists. I agree that all modes need to be safe. However, unsafe behavior like cycling on downtown sidewalks, which is illegal, and running stop signs and other things, which indeed pedestrians and motorists do as well, but we have more effective strategies to address illegal behavior by drivers and pedestrians. So I would be very interested to review your report and to seek your partnership in that education and in brainstorming how one does enforcement on a vehicle that is faster than a person can run.
Absolutely. Commissioner Fritz, please count us as an ally in that effort.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner, do you have a comment?
No, I just want to say thank you for taking the time to brief us. I don't remember the last time a City Club issued a report, and we got three leaders of that effort coming and briefing us in this way and engaging us. And I take it reflects perhaps also the vision of the new executive director of engaging the City Club more with local decision makers. And I compliment you for reaching out to us and getting us your recommendations early.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to second that and encourage this discipline of actually committee members coming to the City Council and the County Board of Commissioners when it's appropriate there as well, and doing what you're doing, just to highlight the report, summarize it. You know, other cities don't have anything like the City Club. Mm-hmm. And it's independent, it's citizen-based, it's topical, and it's a real resource for the whole community. I mean, obviously for the members themselves, happy to be one, proud to be one. It's a great organization, but I think as a community resource, you know, it's been underappreciated. So doing this is a good way to highlight the work of the club, to give the members who've invested a lot of volunteer time into these reports, as you have, a chance to make sure the community knows about it. And I think it's very helpful for us. It is a reminder. Go get the report off the website. Read it. And I will. So the fact that you're here doing this, I think, is not only helpful in this instance, but I hope it does become something close to standard practice for the club's committees.
Absolutely. We'll take that feedback back to the club. And, yeah, I expect to see us here again.
Good.
And I think Commissioner Fish may have been on the East Coast on city business, because we did have the report on the air quality. Yeah. And so I just wanted to let my colleagues on the council know that I'm going to be convening a follow-up group to talk about those issues. So I think it is incumbent on us, when you take the time to give us your research, to then follow up and engage you ongoing.
Can I just clarify something? I was less city business. I was seeking asylum.
Obviously, you didn't find it. You're here. But we're glad that the club is doing this now. It really is helpful to us, and appreciate your work on a very important topic. And again, I want to stress the safety issue that you've raised. Our crime rate's down 9% from last year to this year in major crime. Blessedly, we haven't had a homicide in the city in more than a month. We can't say that about a traffic death. Mm-hmm. We've had several in the last month. Fortunately for bicyclists, it's not always a bicyclist, but unfortunately for all of us, there's been more than 24 Portlanders killed in the public right-of-way by one or another kind of collision this year. So the safety issue is really serious. It's our number one cause of death, a traumatic death in our community right now. Unfortunately, has risen to that level of prominence. So, this is the safety topic is one that we've all got a lot of work to do on, and engineering and planning work in Commissioner Novick's bureau, and enforcement work in my bureau, and work for all of us to do in policy and planning.
Absolutely.
We appreciate, though, your pointing out that a city that's safe for bicyclists is also safer for everybody, because although we have had a rough summer, as the mayor just indicated, the trend over the past 25 years is, as Portland has become more hospitable to various modes of transportation, we've actually outstripped the rest of the nation in terms of improvement in overall traffic safety. What the point you made is exactly right. A city that's safer for bicyclists and pedestrians is also safer for drivers, because when drivers are not just sort of a car monoculture, they pay more attention overall.
Absolutely. And also when they feel empowered to bike and walk and take transit times too, then they know what to look for, and safer behavior results. Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming in this morning, and thanks for your report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have two more.
Yes, item 776, request of Marcus Blanchard to address council regarding homeless R2D2.
All right, Marcus, are you here? Marcus? All right, we'll see if he comes before we get through the communications. You have one other? Kirsten Everett?
777, request of Kirsten Everett to address council regarding homeless issues, R2D2.
Kirsten, are you here? All right. Then let's move on to time certain, number 778, please.
You want to do the consent agenda first?
Oh, sorry. I did it again. Yes, I believe we have no requests for items to come off the consent calendar. If not, then a roll call on the consent calendar, please.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. All right. The next item, please.
Item 778, proclaim the week of August 23rd through August 30th to be Civil Rights Week in Portland.
Well, this is a momentous anniversary, and we have some community leaders here to talk to us about this proclamation. It's like Joanne Hardesty is getting them queued up to come up with her. And, again, if you need to pull up an extra chair or so, we can take people in groups. But Pastor, Rabbi, come on up. Welcome. Good morning and welcome.
Yes, good morning, Mayor. Uh-huh. My name is the Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes. I'm one of the co-chairpersons of the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington that we're planning on holding August the 24th. to our honorable and distinguished Mayor Charlie Hales and distinguished and illustrious members of the City Council. The 1963 March on Washington was a defining historical moment in the history of our nation. It was the visible embodiment of a nonviolent social revolution in America for freedom, justice, and equality that radically changed the face of America. Consequently, it led to the passage of the 1964 Public Accommodation Civil Rights Bill and the 1965 Voters' Rights Bill, the cornerstone of the modern-day civil rights movement that started in 1955 with the Montgomery bus boycott. The 1963 March on Washington, in continuing continuity with the birth of our nation, stands as a historical and living symbol and testimony of both human and divine spirit within America to create a more perfect union, to right the horrendous wrongs of our city, state, and nation, and to fulfill the Declaration of Independence call for full equality and full citizenship. The 1963 March on Washington represents the best of our democratic republic in continuity with the American Revolution. And therefore, we thank our mayor and members of the Portland City Council for acknowledging this historical and living hallmark, as well as the great and many sacrifices of lives that were made to create a more perfect union for all people in our nation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Commissioners and Mayor Hills. My name is Rabbi Joseph Wolf from Chaburah Shalom. First of all, it's a privilege for me to be here this morning at this 50th year of commemorating the March on Washington in 1963. You know, every morning during this month, Jews all around the world blow the shofar, and everybody thinks this is a ram's horn. And everybody thinks this is simply a symbol of the Jubilee, that things should get better in the future. But it's during this month that we blow this ram's horn in order to wake up, to recognize who we really are and who we could be at our best as we come towards the Jewish observance of the high holidays. In thinking about this tremendous moment back in 1963, I myself recall how, as a Jewish white outsider to the civil rights movement, I was drawn in a very, very compelling way in that period of time. As someone who grew up in Boston, I experienced with a sense, I might say, of shame when my parents took me south. South for us meant Maryland, to the Chesapeake Bay Ferry. And my father pointed out me separate bathrooms and separate water fountains. That shame, that sense of quandary, how could a society that purported to be democratic have two sets of standards? How could there be insiders and outsiders, stuck with me? And it was in 1963 that a number of young Jews came back from the South, and they started to explain how texts that, for me, were powerfully ancient were deeply contemporary and prophetic, and it changed my life. Honest to God, from that moment on, in the early 1963s, and into 1965, when Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel marched with Reverend Martin Luther King in Selma, a whole generation of Jews became alerted to the fact that we have work to do. That work is with us 50 years later. Powerfully, compellingly, we all have to embrace this commemoration and get with the work that needs to be done to honor and enfranchise people in our community, African Americans who still feel marginalized, whose voter capacity is questioned by a Supreme Court, whose sense of connection to the community is tormented by events like the Trayvon Martin event this summer. We have work to do at America, and I'm proud and compellingly a part of this morning's commemoration in Portland and want to take the work forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
I can lean in. Hi, everybody.
Good morning.
My name is Aubrey Harrison. I'm the deputy director with Basic Rights Oregon, and my voice usually carries, so I'm not super worried about a microphone. You should let me know if I should be. Basic Rights Oregon strongly supports the proclamation in front of you on the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and Civil Rights Week in the city of Portland. As Oregon's largest gay and transgender advocacy organization dedicated to ensuring that all Oregonians experience equality regardless of gender identity and sexual orientation, we applaud the council for highlighting the groundbreaking March on Washington and the work for racial justice that continues today. Too often, gay and transgender communities and communities of color are discussed as separate communities with no intersection. Those characterizations render lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people of color invisible and sideline their needs when we know that gay and transgender people of color experience multiple struggles of homophobia, transphobia, and racism all at once. 50 years ago, Bayard Rustin actually led the organizing of the March on Washington. As a black gay man, the intersections of racial justice and justice for gay and transgender communities were borne out through his work. Today, gay and transgender people of color continue to fight for visibility and equality. And many gay and transgender Oregonians know the sting of discrimination, and that's how we know that justice means justice for everyone. We know that our commitment to justice must be realized through proclamations and marches and also beyond them. The movement for racial justice happens every day in the slow and critical work to address the ongoing disparities in employment, housing, education, and economic opportunity. We support the proclamation before the council today, and we support the day-to-day work to realize justice for African-American communities and all communities of color in Oregon. Basic Rights Oregon supports the proclamation on the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and Civil Rights Week, and we are proud to support the Albina Ministerial Alliance and the many community groups and leaders working to commemorate this historic anniversary. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor, City Council members. For the record, my name is Joanne Hardesty. And I want to add my profound thanks for the proclamation that is before you today. I also want to say that it's with heavy heart that I sit here today. As we read the proclamation and as we rethink about what was going on in August of 1963, I can't help but have a heavy heart when I realize that if we look at every social indicator of health in a community, we find Native Americans and African Americans still on the bottom. And so as we sit here and we applaud the work of those visionary leaders that pulled together that march 50 years ago, I want to take a moment to really applaud the work of the two co-chairs of this committee, Dr. Leroy Haynes and Dr. T. Allen Bethel. As all of you know, they've been a little busy working on police accountability issues. And the fact that they knew that this was so important that they took the time to convene a group to make this happen, I think is really remarkable. When we talk about civil rights heroes, many people immediately mention Dr. Martin Luther King, who was a great man. But we have many, many heroes right here in this community who every day are working for justice. And I want to say that part of our planning committee, we've had some internal discussions about the appropriate role of politicians in the march that we're going to have on August 24th, 2013, and whether or not their role really should be one of listening to the community rather than implying that somehow they have a message of we fixed this, because the reality is we haven't fixed this. And we've got a lot of work to do and not a lot of political courage to make it happen. And so I'm looking forward to the next 50 years so that the children who come to the march on August 24th, 2013 at South Waterfront Park will say, I know the people that fixed this. They were there at the march with me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
All right.
We have another panel, sir.
Yes, please. I see some other community leaders here. Thank you very much.
Yes, DC. Can you have Matt come in?
Good morning, Joyce. How are you? Joyce, would you like to start? Go ahead.
Sure. Well, good morning. My name is Joyce Harris, and I'm on the steering committee of the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. I'm also the co-chair of the African American Alliance and a couple other little things in the community. But I'm here this morning as a member of the planning committee for this march, and I need to echo Joanne's affirmation of Dr. Haynes and Dr. Bethel for stepping up and saying we need to do something here in Portland, because many of us were thinking about going to Washington, D.C., but I've always been of the opinion that it's far more powerful to work in your community with the people that you struggle with every day, who you work with, and to share that historic moment with them. So the question has been asked, why do we need a march? And I think there are many compelling reasons for why we need a march. And I tend to study history, I teach history, and the 1963 March on Washington wasn't the first attempt to do a march on Washington. In 1941, A. Philip Randolph and Bayard Rustin challenged President Roosevelt to address discrimination in the military. And they threatened to have a march. And the only thing that stopped the march was that President Roosevelt issued Executive Order 8802, which barred discrimination in defense industries and in the federal bureaus, resulting in the Fair Employment Act. And then we have to look at the March on Washington as not just an event in and of itself. It was part of a continuum of activism by everyday people to ensure that there was fair treatment and access for all citizens. And so we look, in 1954, we had the Supreme Court ruling Brown versus Board of Education, determining that separate education was inherently unequal. We are still fighting that battle all these many years later. And we look at the activism in Birmingham, Alabama, 1963, the Children's March, where the children of that city, you know, many of us saw those pictures of dogs attacking people. That was a result of the Children's March. We had young people as young as 4 years old who went to jail because they were sick and tired of what they were seeing in their community. And then in 1963, in Jackson, Mississippi, we had Medgar Evers, who was shot and killed in his driveway for trying to organize voters in Jackson, Mississippi. As a member, he was the head of the NAACP in Jackson. And then who can forget September 1963, when four little girls were blown up in a church, the 16th Avenue Baptist Church. So all of these things kind of happened before and after the March on Washington. Now let's fast forward. And the other things that came out of this, the 1964 Civil Rights Act, 1965 Voting Rights Act, and who would have thought back then that in 2013 we would have to be dealing with the reversal of the Voting Rights Act? So why do we need a march? Because things change, situations change, people who are in power change, and we often have to revisit the very reasons why we needed a Voting Rights Act. That's not gone away. We need a march because the struggle for jobs, freedom, justice, equal education, and equality continues. And as this proclamation is issued, it should be a reminder to all of us, politicians, community members, that we still have much work to do. And anytime we make a decision, We need to look at this proclamation and not look at it as something that was signed off on August 14th, 2013. And it's a done deal. The week will be over on August 30th. This is something that should guide every decision that you make, every time you get ready to sign off on something. You need to ask yourself, does this further the goals that we proclaimed on August 14th? So I thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to us breathing life into this proclamation and making sure that we address the needs of all of our citizens. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. My name is Linda McKim-Bell, and I'm a citizen of Fortland. And I'm volunteering with the Community Outreach and Civic Engagement Subcommittee for this event. I'm a member of the Human Rights Commission, and our chairperson, Kyle Busey, has urged us to volunteer to make this commemorative event a big success. And I think it's very important today, with new threats to the Voting Rights Act, we should all be embracing this commemorative event. And as a member of the First Unitarian Church, we are strong supporter and enthusiastic supporters of this proclamation and this March event. The Unitarian Church sent 200 clergy to the march from Selma to Montgomery, and two were martyred there. So I urge the City Council to enthusiastically support this effort.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Tony Funches, and I am the first Vice President of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. 1963, the NAACP was prominent then. In 2013, we are prominent today. We existed then because there were injustices that needed to be addressed. As Dr. Joyce has indicated, we're talking about jobs, inequality, racism, police brutality. The message and the purpose has not changed. So it is our hope that with this proclamation, this declaration that this commemorative march is important and that this week is about civil rights, that it does not end there. Because 50 years later, someone has forgotten. And so this proclamation is a call, as Rabbi had indicated, to wake up and remember the struggles that we've been through, the fights that we've had, the accomplishments that we have had, and the work that is still to be done. The NAACP was present then. We are present now. We are here for the fight. We are here for the journey. And we are here to serve the community. And we hope that that is your charge as well, to serve the community that has put you in the place to dictate, to lead, and to guide. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Mayor, city commissioners, before I say my very brief words, I made a commitment to my wife, that who is Japanese, and she said, when you come before leaders, you bow not one time, but to each leader. I want to stand with these wonderful folks and thank you for this proclamation, for this event. I want to also salute you as leaders, because no one understands, if they haven't been in the hot seat, what it means to be criticized on every front, unless you've been there. And those of us who've been on the front line fighting for a long time in our small way understand what you've gone through and the leadership that you provide. I remember, and I wanted to make this reference, when I had the opportunity to come under the leadership of a person by the name of Harold Williams. And Mr. Williams identified two things that he wanted me to do. He said, Kelvin Hall, I want you to know that it is your obligation to stand up no matter what anyone says or no matter what type of attack is manufactured against you. And if you do that, then my time will have been well served. And so in that spirit of that commitment, I want to give two suggestions to the City Council. In the coming months, there will be a group of folks that will meet and request that you consider single-member districts in the City of Portland. This charge is going to be a way to finally address equitable opportunities for those folks who can't afford to pay for an expensive campaign or cannot take what I call and what Mr. Williams called the iceberg attack. You see the attack at the top of the iceberg, but you don't see and understand that deep attack that comes underneath the deeper iceberg, which is under the water. It is this group's position that single-member districts will give ample opportunity for folks, black and white, gay and straight, Republicans and Democrats, to have a district drawn on the same lines as the county lines to be able to say, we want to have equal representation. And I would hope that you would be open for that view and that consideration, because this city is long overdue for single member districts. And I know that the power, the millionaire folks and the political entrenched folks attacked the Gresham Group as they tried to create single member districts. So you can let them know that you can continue to attack, because we're going to push for single member districts despite your manufactured attacks about it waters down candidates, because it doesn't. It gives equal opportunity to all folks. Secondly, I appreciate the time. My wife told me to stick to my notes, and so I apologize because she's watching on television. I want to say this, that while we have come a long way, we have a long way to go. When Trayvon's verdict came down, manufactured intelligence used as material fact to justify an exoneration of someone that should have been went to jail. But while everyone's paying attention to that verdict, they missed a very critical piece. There were two verdicts. It was aggravated assault that was levied as a second verdict, which means that he was the aggressor, to add insult to injury. Why do I cite this case? Because it seems to me that folks have forgotten Lord Byron, the 1700th century poet who filed the first defamation case in court and won. If we look at the Lord Byron case, we see that all we have to do is stick to the Constitution, which leads me to your equity of office. Mr. Williams applied for that job and did not get that job. So I would ask humbly that you clearly define the office of equity and what the purpose is going to be, because it is clear that it can make a difference in the city's 95 neighborhoods, not behind closed doors talking to bureaucrats, but out in the city serving as mediators and addressing issues and serving as a recorder of facts. At a recent meeting, someone came, not part of the group, and said, why are you guys complaining? And so I want to clearly answer that person publicly. Dissent is his greatest form of loyalty. Thank you very much for this proclamation. Thank you very much for your leadership. And I'm done.
Thanks, Kelly. Thank you very much. Good morning, Pastor.
Reverend Mark Knutson, pastor of Augustana Lutheran Church in Portland, member of the Albina Ministerial Alliance and part of the planning committee for this march. It's always nice to come before the Mayor Hales and the council when I know you're going to pass something we're asking to pass. You're all ready to do that. It's important that this resolution, this proclamation be made, declaring August 23rd through 30th Civil Rights Week in Portland. But we know it's more than a week as we do this together. And as my colleagues have spoken so eloquently before me, just a few words from me. You know, 1963, I was an 11-year-old at Glencoe Grade School. My wife was a 5-year-old over on Northeast 14th and Wygant, having moved there when she was born, basically. And in 63, we couldn't have been married in many states in this country, just as many can't be married today. And that march on 63 was a signal moment of hundreds of years of struggle. And it made the impression on me as an 11-year-old in a family growing up committed to civil rights, but those moments that culminate, like we pray next week will, for a whole nother generation coming up to see the issues again afresh and anew and be ready to take a stand. and to move forward. In 91, we were at Ebenezer Baptist Church for the King celebration. First 15th of January actually happened on a Monday, which is the holiday. And it was one of those great moments in Ebenezer, one of those great preach-offs of the great leaders of the civil rights movement. The last one to speak was Reverend Otis Moss, and he gave the closing sermon. And he ended up by saying he went back to his small town where he grew up and asked one of his elders, who was in her 90s by then, how far have we come? That was the theme of the day. And he said, Mrs. Walker, how far have we come? She said, Otis, somewhere between O Lord and Thank You, Jesus. Now, I'm an interfaith leader, and so for my colleagues in the Buddhist, Jewish, Hindu, Muslim communities, and so many people of goodwill, there's different ways to phrase that. That works in every setting. But when we think of how important it is for every generation to recommit itself, to take on issues of racism, poverty, war, homophobia, sexism, ageism, you can just go down that list. Every generation has to recommit itself to educate our young, to educate ourselves, and to weave that beloved community. This is an opportunity in this city to name those wrongs that are still there, still present, and to recommit ourselves as a community to say, yes, we've come a ways, but we've got so much farther to go. But trusting in the divine and in the gifts of each person of many backgrounds, we can take on the challenges today. So I heartily thank you for making this proclamation, and may we all march next week together and recommit ourselves to the generations that yet to come. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thanks very much. Are there other folks that are here to speak?
Okay.
Yes. Anyone else that would like to speak, come on up.
Yes.
Good morning. And if there's anybody else that would like to speak on this, come on up as well. Good morning. Welcome.
Hi. I'm going to be very brief because I just recently got the note, and I want to be respectful. My name is Bruce Feathers. I'm the chairman and CEO of Featherlight, a minority-owned business for the past 16 years. I'll just say this in relationship to the proclamation. One of the things that we sometimes miss is minority business development is another arm of the civil rights movement and development. Because so often, before being an entrepreneur and a minority business owner in the city certified by the state of Oregon, I spent 20 years in corporate America in management. And when I did that, I lived in suburbs. When I became an entrepreneur, and my business was located on MLK, I was able to serve on Urban League Board. I lived in suburbs and did not engage in the community, but later on, when I became an entrepreneur, I was in the community and I was able to serve 7 years on the board of Friends of the Children. And I can go on. The point is, oftentimes, minority businesses will be allowed to stay in the community and therefore engage in some of the nonprofit efforts and some of the community efforts and the civil rights efforts. We need minority talent to not be usurped to the suburb, like in fact I was, but to be able to prosper and grow and develop within urban boundaries so that talent can be used, in fact, to do the kinds of things that we want to do in civil rights. And I'll stop there. I have more to say on another matter regarding our parking situation, which, by the way, I, as a minority business owner in the whole Ellis McCoy thing, got caught in the middle, and now I'm about to lose my business. But out of respect, I'll save that for another time.
Thank you, Bruce. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm Dan Handelman with Peace and Justice Works in Portland Cop Watch. And we are supporters of the march that's happening on the 24th and the proclamation today. I'm also a member of the steering committee of the AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. And it hasn't been explicitly stated yet that the march in 1963 was explicitly a march for jobs and equality. And so in addition to the faith leaders you've heard from, the civil and human rights leaders that you've heard from today, Labor is supporting the march that's happening here on the 24th. Job with Justice, I know, is one of the big supporters, and many independent individual unions are supporting it. I think that's very significant. I think it's this is a tremendous moment for Portland. And Martin Luther King, in his speech on that day, mentioned police brutality that people had suffered in the struggles. And in his later years, he became a vocal opponent of the Vietnam War. So if you're wondering why Peace and Justice Works in Portland Cop Watch are on board, it's because in the spirit of Dr. King and of the entire March for Equality and Rights, that peace and justice and police accountability are all part of the same equation. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Joe, good morning.
My name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. We also support the proclamation and congratulate you on that. However, we are aware that those are words. If John Lewis, who's a representative in the House, was to come to your house, he would have to walk over people that are sleeping in the streets that you kicked off the curb. So when you do this proclamation and you read the words are fantastic. They talk about equality. They talk about jobs. They talk about we are committed to do all of these things. Well, you have three things that you could do now. You could do something about the people sleeping on the street. You could really work with them. You could meet with them. You could try to figure out some solution to the problem. So those people, like John Lewis would tell you, need dignity, they need equality. They come to you every week and ask you to stop the fines. You won't do that. So when you do these proclamations, it's really confusing to me because I will march on this. I will support this. But when you read the proclamation, I have trouble with that because I don't know if you understand the words. And there's a concept that I thought about a long time ago. It's called verbal reality, that you don't go past the words. You don't do anything. You justify what you do by saying we spend millions of dollars on people, and we still can't solve it. But if we do too much, we'll be a magnet. So where is the answer in that? As soon as you make that last statement, you violate the very proclamation you're going to read today. Because John Lewis and Martin Luther King and the rest of the Big Six would tell you straight out, there's something wrong with people sleeping on the street. That's not rocket science. Fix it. You could do simple things like figuring out how to take their belongings and check them in so it's not all over the street, so your business alliance people would be a little more happier because it's nice and neat. You could do that. It would be so cheap. You could rent trailers, those pods that people rent all the time, and have the homeless check the stuff in. You could do all of that. You have your employees going to protest today because they've been without a contract since July. But you're going to read a proclamation today about jobs. But you're screwing the unions that you represent. And I don't think many of you know. You just leave it to other people. So when you do the proclamation, please listen to the words, damn it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else want to speak on this morning? Then let me read the proclamation, and I know there's going to be some council comments as well, but very pleased to add our words and our commitment to the eloquent words and commitment that we've heard from these community leaders this morning. I really appreciate you all being here and organizing this commemoration and commitment and to all the work that we're doing together. Proclamation says, whereas 50 years ago, African American and other civil rights leaders organized 250,000 people who marched on Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, demand justice from the United States government. And whereas Jim Crow, segregation, voter discrimination, and second-class citizenship were laws of the land. And whereas the critical issues for the 1963 marchers were access to jobs, housing, police, education, and economic opportunity amid profound and legally sanctioned discrimination based on the color of one's skin.
And whereas people of all colors joined the effort to ensure that the U.S. Constitution and the protections it offered would apply equally to blacks and others who were denied basic human rights. And whereas the August 1963 March on Washington was a pivotal moment in the movement toward justice and the struggle for the full human rights of all. And whereas while we as a nation have made significant gains through legislation, voting rights, and other measures over the last 50 years, these efforts have not eliminated discriminatory practices and outcomes within our governments and institutions, where racism continues to this day. And whereas we recognize that injustice and discrimination of all forms are still with us, and that our march towards justice is thus not finished. And whereas a recent U.S. Supreme Court decision that gutted a key provision of the landmark 1965 Voting Rights Act, the consistent overrepresentation of people of color in the criminal justice system, and the shredding of the safety net for many low-income households and communities, lets us know that we have much more work to do as a nation to achieve the dream that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. shared that day in Washington, D.C. 50 years ago. And whereas the issues of jobs, housing, police, education, and economic opportunities are just as critical today as they were 50 years ago, and whereas we honor the work of the civil rights leaders of 50 years ago and recommit ourselves to continue to work for equality for all and the elimination of the last vestiges of discrimination within our midst. Now, therefore, I, Charlie Hales, Mayor of the City of Portland, the City of Roses, proclaim the week of August 23rd through August 30th to be Civil Rights Week in Portland, and in so doing, affirm support for the events in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, including support for Portland's march on Saturday, August 4th, 2013, and call on all people of Portland to affirm and support the human rights of all. Thank you all for your work in this cause. Council members, comments, thoughts?
Thank you, Mayor. First, I want to thank our mayor for not only bringing this proclamation forward, but typically in this body, proclamations are heard at the beginning of council, but not as a time certain. So I thank you for not only bringing it forward, Mayor, but scheduling it as a time certain and bringing forward our honored guests today. And I want to thank our honored guests from the civil rights community, from the faith community, from the community, and thank you for your eloquent testimony. This morning marks an important milestone, the 50-year anniversary of a March on Washington, an event which has shaped the next 50 years of American history. And many of us remember parts of Dr. King's words on that August day 50 years ago, but today I want to acknowledge a lesser-known figure from that event, Cleveland Llewellyn Robinson. I first met Cleve in 1986, over 25 years ago. He is a great American story. He immigrated to the United States from Jamaica in 1944. In Manhattan, he unionized a dry goods store where he worked. A few years later, he joined the staff of District 65, which later became affiliated with the great progressive union, the United Auto Workers. For the next 40 years until his retirement in 1992, Cleve was a great leader in the labor movement. So who is Cleve Robinson? He was the administrative chairman of that historic March on Washington on August 28, 1963. In fact, if you watch Dr. King's speech, you will see that sitting right behind him was Cleve Robinson, who shared his dream of a greater America. Cleve was a leader in the struggle to mobilize American opposition to apartheid in South Africa. He organized the Council of Black Trade Unionists, and he supported movements for labor and human rights in many African countries. And he spent his whole life working to ensure that Dr. King's birthday would be celebrated as a national holiday. Reflecting on this historic anniversary, Mayor, and on Cleve Robinson's life, I too am proud of the progress we have made as a country over the past 50 years. But as our guests have stated so eloquently, we still have so much work to do. I was in Washington a couple weeks ago when the Supreme Court struck down Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, an enormous step backward for civil rights. But the next day, the Supreme Court struck down DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, a great step forward for marriage equality. One step forward, one step backward. And today, over 30 states have voter ID laws which make it more difficult for some Americans, especially communities of color,